Welcome back to the Track and Field History Podcast. It's been a while since I last did one of these. Today we're going to take a look at one of America's greatest and most forgotten competitors. I want to start by setting a scene in your mind. You're in a popular Los Angeles bowling alley. It's 1964, when bowling was one of America's major sports. Two very tall, very broad-shouldered, very strong women are playing together. One white, one black. One is an excellent bowler, known for winning gambling pots, and the other has never before seen an alley or even a bowling ball. They don't speak each other's language. Yet they're having so much fun together as the shark teaches the rookie how to bowl. If anyone else in the alley has a problem with how they're acting, or even that a black and a white woman are socializing together, their approach is quickly cut off by KGB agents. The white woman is being protected by those KGB agents. They're her minders. She's the Soviet Union's Tamara Press, the Olympic shot put and discus champion. She has an American acting as a host, showing her around Los Angeles. It's Earlene Brown, the greatest American women's thrower of the 20th century. So, you know that 4 years ago, Michelle Carter won the Olympic shot put title. She was the first American to ever win the women's shot put at the Olympics, and the only American to medal since Earlene Brown did it in 1960. In fact, Brown's the only other woman to have ever won an Olympic shot put medal besides Carter. 12 years ago, Stephanie Brown Trafton won Olympic discus gold. Aside from the boycotted 1984 games, in which none of the world's top throwers took part, Brown Trafton is the only post-World War II American to ever win an Olympic medal in the discus. The only others to finish in the top six are Olga Connolly, who was a Czech expatriate who came to the United States. She finished sixth in 1968. And Earlene Brown finished fourth and sixth in 1956 and 1960. So who is this Earlene Brown? She was from a tiny town in Texas, but she didn't stay there long. Her parents separated when she was just 3 years old, and her mother picked up and moved to Los Angeles. As a young child, Earlene got a start in sports through a police league, track club, and found success in the basketball throw. It was something you threw the basketball for distance, and it was a commonly competed event for girls in the 1940s and earlier. And when she got to high school, a gym teacher saw her and thought that she had real talent and got her throwing and tried to get her into more serious competition. But as a teenager, she wasn't terribly interested and didn't see anything beyond just local competitions. Her talent was still known about around Los Angeles, which was the hotbed for track and field in the United States at the time in the 50s. And so in 1956, she was 20 years old. She was married and had a baby boy. And still some AAU coaches got her into area competitions. And then she really began to figure out that she had Olympic talent and what that meant. She later said, "Hey, I didn't know you got to travel overseas. I wanted to see the world. Wait till I tell my husband." And she said that it was a really bad idea because she asked him if she could go. And she said that was a bad mistake because she gave him the authority to tell her whether or not she could go. He said no. And she decided to do it anyway. So she moved out of the house and with her mother. And before long, her marriage fell apart. But she, by the time the Olympic trials rolled around, she already held the American records of both the shot and the discus. She swept both of those events at the trials and then went on to the Olympics in Melbourne, where she took sixth in the shot and fourth in the discus. And after the marriage fell apart, made it even a little bit harder to train. Brown didn't have a whole lot of money to begin with. African Americans in the mid-50s in America didn't have a whole lot of choices, even in Los Angeles, a slightly more progressive place than Texas, which is why they moved there. And African American women had even fewer choices. So while she was married with two incomes, she'd only been able to train and travel to competitions with community fundraising efforts. As a single mother, it was pretty hard for even to have time to train effectively. She had begun as a housekeeper and then trained to become a hairdresser. So as a hairdresser, at least she's working for herself. And at very often, the only time she had to train was on a lunch break. She would go down to the park down from where she was. She did her hairdressing work and would have bites as a sandwich in between doing throws in the park. Now, compare all of this to her Soviet counterparts at the time. They nominally had government or military jobs, but really, their job, they were full-time athletes. There were some other differences between Brown and her Soviet counterparts. We now know that Soviet weightlifters were using testosterone or testosterone-like drugs by 1954 and probably earlier, and it's hard to imagine that Soviet throwers weren't doing the same by 1956. That Brown could be even reasonably competitive with them is a testament to her talent and her competitive ability. 1958, Brown traveled with the U.S. national team. Very often that's what happened at the U.S. national championships, the AEU championships. The top competitors were selected for a team that would get to tour Europe on the AEU's dime. And Brown ended up the world's number one ranked shot putter that year, by virtue of beating all the top Soviets at a meet in Moscow. In fact, the only other American woman to ever rank number one in the world in the shot put is Michelle Carter. In 1959, Brown won the shot and the discus at the Pan American Games, and that was the same year she became associated with Ed Temple's Tiger Bells. That was the women's track program at Tennessee State University in Nashville, and it supplied the bulk of the USA women's track team and virtually all of its stars. Brown remained in Los Angeles and didn't actually train with the Tiger Bells, but she joined them for competition when she could. As an older and wiser woman, and one tall and strong enough to scare off anyone who seemed threatening, she was a mother figure to the Tiger Bell team and became one of Wilma Rudolph's very best friends. When Rudolph won her first Olympic gold in 1960, she ran the length of the stadium to give her first hug to Brown. Brown won her shot put bronze in 1960 and took 6th in the discus that year in the Olympics. 4 years later, she finished 12th in the shot put, which made her the first woman to compete in 3 Olympic shot puts. Not the first American woman, just the first woman anywhere in the world. At that point, throwing had run its course for Brown, but not her athletic career. She moved on to a pro sport, one that allowed her to leave hairdressing behind for a while. She went into roller derby. If you're not familiar with it, take one of the old indoor 11-lap-to-the-mile bankboard tracks and put pro wrestling on wheels on it. Or maybe think minor league hockey without a puck or a goal, just the speed and the hitting and the fights. You know, what we really go to games to see. Roller derby has rules and it has scoring, but it's kind of beside the point. You're there to see the action and the collisions. Anyway, Earlene Brown was over 6 feet tall when she strapped on skates, and she weighed close to 250 pounds. She was still light on her feet, though, because, of course, she was a champion thrower. Eventually, she earned the nickname 747 for her size and arm span. She stayed with roller derby for 11 years. And if you go to the Sidious Mag website, you can see a video interview from, I believe, 1967 with the local newscaster about her and roller games. Brown died very young in 1983 at age 47. I have actually never been able to find a cause of death, although finding any information about Brown is actually kind of hard. It was a life well lived. In an interview, she said, "When I was young and ashamed of my size, I never thought something of which I was ashamed, my size and strength, could make me feel proud. But I feel proud now."